last one.
To reintroduce the audience. So we are in the process of wrapping that up. We're going to be presenting that to Congress in December. We have focused our assessment on three different areas of feasibility. We've looked at the biological and ecological feasibility, the legal aspects, and the socioeconomic impacts of a potential reintroduction. And on that last point in particular, I will say that the primary recommendation that we make in our study is that a professional economics firm needs to be contracted to do that type of assessment. We really concentrated on trying to focus on what some of the impacts might be, what concerns we were hearing from constituents, and where we thought further study was needed before reintroduction could seriously be considered, because there are a number of concerns regarding potential impacts. Sea otters can have a number of beneficial effects on communities. They bring in a lot of tourism dollars. They're very good in terms of restoring the kelp ecosystem that has really been hammered by the purple sea urchin explosions that we've experienced in the last couple of years. So those are all good things, but there are a lot of concerns we're hearing from the shellfish fisheries, the Dungeness crab folks in particular, about the potential of bringing sea otters back. So there's a lot of open questions still. We did go out to people in the communities and do a number of stakeholder interviews. So we interviewed people from commercial fisheries, from sport fisheries, from conservation organizations, visitors associations. We tried to really cover the whole gamut of different interests on the coast and to summarize all of the perspectives we were hearing from folks in our report to Congress. The other thing I wanted to point out is that there are two different feasibility studies going on at the same time. So it's been very confusing for people. There's also an organization called the Alaka Alliance, which is a nonprofit organization, and they are focused just on the Oregon coast, looking at sea otter reintroduction. They released a feasibility study at the end of August. So like I said, that's been an endless source of confusion. Why are there two different studies? But it's because they were already working on theirs, and then we got the congressional direction to do one as well. So you've got two different studies on sea otter reintroduction coming out pretty close to one another. So again, just raising awareness about this. I will be sharing it with all the port commissions and county commissions as soon as it's available, which will be at the end of December. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to ask any questions that you might have at this time.
Sure, I think Commissioner Ward has a... Go ahead,
yeah, Michelle, I'm just wondering, I guess I haven't really heard any of the background behind the sea otter issue and the need for the reintroduction of the sea otter issue. Have they declined to an unmanageable level?
I don't even think they're present.
Or are they gone from the Oregon coast? Or
what? Yeah. So the history of sea otters is that they used to occur all over the Pacific Rim. So originally from like Japan, all across the Aleutian Islands in Alaska, all the way down into Baja, California. So okay. We used to have sea otters all along the Pacific coast. And then they were hunted out for their fur in the 1700s and 1800s. So they were entirely eliminated from the Oregon coast by the early 1900s.
So they
were hunted nearly to extinction. And then there were a couple small remnant colonies that persisted. So there was only one small group that persisted down in California, and they still have a population that has grown slowly over time down there in central California. But then there aren't any more sea otters until now you get up into Washington, where they were reintroduced. So there were a number of reintroductions that occurred in the 1960s and 1970s, and most of those were successful, and that is what resulted in sea otters being once again in Southeast Alaska and in British Columbia and in Northern Washington. There was also a reintroduction that they attempted on the Southern Oregon coast, and that was unsuccessful. They persisted there for about 10 years, but then eventually petered out and disappeared. So right now there's still a big portion of the range from Point Grenville, Washington, down to south of San Francisco, there are still no sea otter populations.
Well, I have no idea. It's so strange because you go to like the aquarium in Newport and you see a sea otter swimming around. Yeah. I never think about them not being present. I never knew that. How many people really even know that's true?
It's been really interesting talking to people and finding out how many people are unaware that they ever used to be here. Yeah. Well,
I just assumed they were always here. Yeah. I had no idea that they weren't.
Oh, okay.
That's where I'm coming from. I think it's great that they're taking a look at it. I mean, if they used to be here, it'd be nice to have them back.
Mm-hmm. Now that there are inland otters. I mean, you have a sea otter and then you have the
river otters.
The smaller flavor that exists along the rivers, right?
Right. Yeah.
I see them here at the port occasionally.
Yeah, and river otters will go out like onto the beach or onto the rocky shore areas. So sometimes people will see river otters and think that they're sea otters, but they're very different. Sea otters are entirely aquatic. And like their back feet are flippers, so they really can't move around on land very well. Like river otters are very agile and can move around quite easily. But sea otters are entirely aquatic.
Have you received any negative feedback from anybody in terms of wanting to reintroduce sea otters to the Oregon coast?
Yes, the Dungeness crab fishermen are very concerned. Because sea otters do eat shellfish. That is what they survive on. And they can eat a lot of them. So they are concerned that if populations were to grow very large, that would impact the Dungeness crab fishery.
Don't they affect the abalone crab industry along from Monterey South in that area? Isn't there some controversy relative to the foraging on the abalone?
Yes, they will definitely eat abalone. They will not eliminate them. Abalone will not go extinct because of sea otters. They did co-evolve together, but they do affect the fishery in that, the abalones will be what they call cryptic. They'll hide, in crevices and rocks, and they'll tend to be smaller. So they can coexist with sea otters, but you can't really have an effective fishery with sea otters and abalone together.
So the controversy is going to be the competition for forage between the fisheries and the otters.
That's yes.
What eats sea otters, or does anything eat sea otters?
Nothing really. They're what's known as an apex predator. They are at the top of the food chain. There's one exception, and that is that in the Aleutian Islands recently, killer whales, orcas, have started eating sea otters, but they don't normally do that in the rest of their range. The biggest source of mortality in California is shark bites, but the sharks don't eat the otters. They think they mistake them for seals, and they will get sea otters washing up that have been bitten by sharks, but they're not consumed. In fact, we had one on the Oregon coast not too long ago that washed up from a shark bite. The sea otters, because they rely on their very thick fur, which is why they got hunted, because they have this really nice, luxurious, thick pelt, they don't have blubber like seals do. So for a shark, which is looking for a meal that has high caloric value, they're just mostly hair, and the sharks don't like them, so they tend to bite them and then spit them out. But of course, it kills the otter.
In the other areas, in the other areas where you've done reintroduction that was successful, have you controlled the population? In other words, do you get too many?
I think if you talk to people in Southeast Alaska, there are some people there who would definitely tell you there are too many here. And in California, they think they don't have enough. There's a big difference in terms of how large the population can grow depending on the nature of the habitat. So in California, you've got they're very shallow divers. So they can't dive real deep. So in California, we've got a very narrow continental shelf and a narrow area of shallow foraging depth. They tend to be much slower growing and expanding in their population, as opposed to Southeast Alaska, where you've got a very highly convoluted coastline and a lot of shallow areas. So they've got a huge foraging area there. They can grow very quickly in some place like Southeast Alaska. So there's a big difference in how large they can grow and how quickly, depending on the nature of the habitat.
But there's no population control. I mean, how do you know? We have an issue with sea lions here.
So it seems,
you know, and I'm just thinking, you know, I'm just curious about that more than
No. That's a really good point. And that's another concern that has been raised is that with all of these marine mammals, they're protected under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. And so your options for control are very limited.
Good to know. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I was asking, Michelle, that you didn't include Alaska in your reintroduction plan. Is that from political pressure or?
They don't need to.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question.
Well, you talked about Oregon, Washington, California in the reintroduction plan, but you didn't include Alaska.
The congressional direction we got was for the contiguous United States of the Pacific Coast.
Alaska doesn't mean that they've got too many.
Well, I kind of figured it might have been political pressure, too.
I think Alaska probably feels like they've got plenty of otters, but I don't know. It was Senator Merkley who put that language into the bill. So I think because Oregon is the only state that does not have a sea otter population still, so that was probably the motivation.
Interesting.
David, any questions?
No, I don't have any questions.
Very educational. I appreciate it.
Very informative. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And like I said, I will make you aware when our report comes out, and we will keep you in the loop as conversations continue.
All right. If you have any other programs for the ports, this is we don't often get entertaining programs at our meeting. We have to.
Well, very good. Well, very nice to meet
Although
you all.
We're going to get two in a row here tonight.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
He's always rude. Okay.
You guys know him just well as what we do.
Yeah. We know how you guys work.
I know him better.
Yeah, I know.
Mike, it's good to see you made it.
Thank you.
Did you get to hear about the otters, Mike?
Oh yeah, I'm excited.
Okay, it just thrills the heck
out. You look pretty excited about it. Okay.
Kind of like the seals.
Moving on, item number 3. Sarah, City of Florence proposal of a multi-unit property tax exemption CMUPTE program.
Mupties.
Take four.
I'd rather have it all set.
You're welcome to both of
you. Are you okay if you hear from both of us?
We would be disappointed.
Is this the third time we've done it today? Yeah, this is the third time we've done it today. Fourth time this week so far. We have one more tomorrow.
Oh,
we'll try looking at you guys too. Hello. Can I use the mic? And Sarah, there's also the screen right here. Oh, perfect.
I'm gonna look at this one.
That's okay. We got this down. Alrighty. Well, thank you so much for having us. I'm Mayor Reynolds. I'm the city manager for the city of Florence. As you know.
Can you put the escape button? I don't think we shared it on our Zoom friends can't see it. Can you see our presentation?
Are you presenting yet?
Hold on just one second.
There you go.
Now, can you see it?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Perfect.
Okay, very good. Sarah, you're so smart. That's why we have her. So this is Sarah. She's our senior economic development analyst. And actually, Sarah had a really great idea. We're going to just let Bill give this presentation because he's now heard it twice and already just heard it about an hour ago.
I'm old. I've already forgotten.
Rob's only heard it once. Okay.
I've only heard it once.
Bill does have one like that.
But I read everything.
We wouldn't do that to you. So anyways, I have to give respect where respect is due. Bill is also a city councilor, and he's the chairperson for urban renewal, and he's worked really hard this week. And then Rob, thank you for serving.
We're going to double my pay for all the work I've done. Yeah.
Double zero is double zero.
Yeah.
Big pack. So thank you again, Terry, for having us here and allowing us to be on your agenda tonight. So let's go to the next slide. We are here to talk about the multi-unit property tax exemption program that the city of Florence is considering. And so how did we get here today? Well, we started with housing needs analysis back in 2018. Out of that report, the city of Florence was shown through that work that we needed about 1,600 new housing units in Florence over the next 20 years. So since 2018, we've seen about 50 to 60 homes, most of those single family residents built over the last couple of years, but nothing to keep pace with the existing demand or the pent up demand. As part of that 1600 new housing units that report told us we needed, we also know that about 1600 or 600 units need to be multi-unit housing, ranging from anything from duplexes to townhomes and larger apartment buildings. Now this MUPTI program, you're gonna hear a little bit more about, targets specifically units that are more densely built, three or more units, anywhere from three units and a triplex, a quadplex, or quad, I guess, and apartments, excuse us again, this is the third time we've done this today. So the recommendations included in that HNA for the housing needs analysis had a big long list of recommendations, and the city has worked through many of those recommendations, some of them small items, some of those large items over the last couple of years, but with demand and the need for more housing, as well as working through our list, we are now landing on the MUPTI program. The city council included investigating and working on and bringing forward tax exemption programs this year. It was in their work plan, and the planning commission also has been working on this. So the planning commission had it in their work plan, city council had it in their work plan, and we are now here to talk about the results of that and where you come in as a port, as an overlapping or an additional taxing district in this area. So we do need your support.
So a MUPTI, like we said, stands for Multi-Unit Property Tax Exemption Program. And they've been around in the state for about 30 years. Salem has had there since the mid-1980s. So we're not the first person to do this. And it's definitely been around and been proven to be successful. It's a state-enabled program, so it's in the ORS that people can, or that municipalities can do this. And it incentivizes builders to build multi-unit properties. So what it allows is properties to be exempt from the assessed value of the new residential construction. So it doesn't allow, or the property would still pay taxes on any commercial part of the property as well as any land. So if someone came in downtown on Bay Street and built a commercial down below with five units on top, they would just be exempted from the assessed value of the residential on top. They would still pay taxes on the commercial value as well as the land value. The intent of the MUPTI is to lower those operating costs so that the program becomes financial, or the development becomes financially feasible. As we all know, over the last 18 to 20 months in particular, construction has gotten significantly more expensive, and this really is a way to try to make it pencil better for developers. So how we got to the city's recommendation for our MUPTI program was we worked with a ad hoc committee of planning commissioners, as well as community and economic development committee members. Eric Kopman, Andrew Miller, and Phil Tarvin represented the planning commission, and the community and economic development committee was represented by Russ Pearson and Dan Lofi. They met biweekly, so every other week, for about 3.5 months, and really looked at what a MUPTI looks like throughout the state,
but they specifically looked at Cottage Grove and Newport / Lincoln County's MUPE programs and said, since they were in communities about relative size to Florence, but they're also very different in how they enacted a MUPE program. Florence's recommended program is based really heavily on Cottage Grove's program because it was really user-friendly and streamlined and didn't have as many barriers to entry for building. So their recommendation for our proposed MUPE program and what we come to you tonight to hope you will have a resolution of support for is these are the criteria that the project would be eligible for. So the developer must show that the project is fiscally infeasible without the MUPE. The onus is on the developer to prove that. So in the code, there's a very specific outline on what that looks like and how they would do that. We're not here to give away tax revenue. We want to make sure that they're doing the work in order to get that benefit. Next, the property must be within a quarter mile of a fixed transit route. This is part of the state's ORS code that it has to be within that quarter mile or within a light rail station. And since we don't have a light rail station, it's within a quarter mile of a fixed transit route. That's our Rhodey Express, and it really does cover a good chunk of the city. Not up 35th towards like the golf course, and then definitely not up towards the beach, but otherwise it's a good chunk of the city within the Florence city limits. The development must include three or more units, and they cannot be used at any time for short-term rentals or hotel spaces. But these aren't Airbnbs, these aren't hotels, these are for residents that live full-time in Florence.
I have a question.
Can I finish my slide at least before I get there?
Yep, you can. Thank you.
Currently, this benefit is also only for new construction, so no remodels would be available for the MUPE program or any of those type things. And then also, a project will have to complete three or more public good benefits based on the unit count. So for a triplex, they'd have to complete at least three. For a quad, they would have to complete four. And for five or more units, they'd have to complete five. And we have a pretty... While you asked your question, I'll put this up there. This is a pretty exhaustive list of the public good benefits. Some of these things are required in our current code. So like for larger developments, you have to have open spaces. You have to have those parks and recreation facilities, but we're really looking for above and beyond what is required of code. I can take your question.
Oh, yeah. So with regards to the short-term housing, How do you regulate that? I mean, under the guy, if I enter into this program as a builder under the guise of not doing short term, I mean, and then I flip it to short term, how do you regulate that? I mean, what teeth are involved in that from your side of it?
So part of this is that it is an application, and so you will know that this development exists and that they are what they're providing, however many units, etc. We do plan as the next step for the city to enact short-term rental regulations that would regulate and monitor that side of it. There's a couple of ways you can tackle that through either a code enforcement officer. There are some mechanisms that you can enter into contracts and vendors that can regulate and monitor all the different sites that have short-term rentals, et cetera. And then there'll be a self-attest. So they'll also have to say, hey, we are not doing short-term rentals. So there'll be a variety of ways. Most people are really good at self-policing their community as well. So this is a highly publicized program. It's not only getting this scrutiny as it's being rolled out, each applicant will also get that scrutiny. And I am nearly certain somebody would turn somebody in if they found out that there was a short-term rental in a property that was getting a property tax exemption. Well,
Aaron, didn't you say in your meeting that that part of the process is once a year, they kind of have to reapply. And I would imagine their past practices would be reviewed on an annual basis to make sure they're still qualifying.
And this is a good benefit. So if they're getting it and every year they have to self-attest and go through the process of, yeah, you know, I meet all the criteria, I'm still eligible for this project. So with that, if they are found to not qualify anymore, they are no longer going to get the exemption. And people who are found to be not qualified, but they did get the exemption, the Department of Revenue has mechanisms to go back and collect those revenues.
No.
I will say in Salem, there was a apartment building that was found out to have short-term rentals in it, and they cut their MUFTI off halfway through the 10-year exemption. And it was a big apartment building that was getting a lot of property taxes exempt, and they had to start paying them the next year. So I would say the cost savings would probably outweigh the interest of having an Airbnb.
So this program is really designed for people that are building rental space.
Yes.
For long-term rentals.
Yes.
Period. It's really not, they're not building something that somebody can buy.
Yeah.
As a single family residential.
Yeah.
So it's mainly the rental type
yeah.
arena that this is addressing. It's addressing those 600,
yeah.
the need for those 600.
The easiest
spaces.
Way to describe it is that one person would be paying to Wayne County their taxes every year. So it's not, you know, if it's a 10,
not a condo,
it's not a condo where every apartment is paying a separate tax
right.
bill. This is one person paying
yeah,
all
the owner,
one bill.
Yeah,
okay.
one bill.
Okay.
Does that answer your question, Craig?
Yeah, you know, and Rob brought up an interesting point. I mean, so you qualify for this program and then you reap the benefits and then you sell it. And the other person, the buyer doesn't play by the rules that the seller had to play by to participate in the program. I mean, I know we don't want to get into those things, but.
Would they even be eligible for that?
So the way we understand it is mm-hmm. that the exemption goes with the property, and as long as the property continues to apply, somebody would get the exemption. It wouldn't reset the clock. It would still be for whatever that 10-year period is, and they would still have to be eligible. So the thoughts are, for the most part, for a big investment like this and doing a project like this, most of the time people stay in the project that 5 to 7 years at least, because that's when you start to really generate the positive cash flows.
Yeah.
So we are going to verify that whole ownership piece and the selling and how that works. We are going to verify that, because I did not have that answer off the top of my head right now, but the property does have to qualify for it, and it is all about the property and being eligible for it every year. So the new owner would still have to do the work to qualify.
Thank you.
So the exemption, excuse me, the exemption is for rental properties only. Is that correct?
Yes.
Back to your public benefits, the slide before, the first thing talked about accessible rates for sales or rental rates. What does that mean?
That's a typo.
Maybe I've
done this presentation three times this week and you found the one typo on it. So congratulations.
For rental rates.
For rental rates only.
All right.
And I'll tell you, that's in our code too. So I appreciate your support. and I'm happy to go over any of these specifics that you have questions about at the end, but they are also, I believe, the memorandum. I don't know if you all got it, but we have specific answers for all of those about what it specifically means. So,
but to qualify, based on the size of the project, they have to meet a certain amount of these, that list?
Yes. Yeah, so a triplex would have to have at least three on that list. A quad would have to have at least four on that list. And and five or more units would have to have at least five on that list. And I'll say, from speaking to the Cottage Grove city manager, he was pretty clear that they had most applications came between 6 and 9 of them included.
But none of them are mandatory?
they have to have at least three that are mandatory. So, but they can choose which ones are mandatory or which ones they're choosing.
So they can have a common meeting room, open spaces, and special architectural features and charge whatever they want then.
Yes.
Well, it's not rent control. There's no there's no limitation on it. This is
Okay, that's not good, but all right, I understand that.
Can we finish our presentation, then we're happy to answer any questions.
Well, I can't remember the questions at the end, but yes, go ahead.
That's our problem, we're elderly.
So if the MUFTI is approved, and what we need to get the MUFTI approved is 51% of the taxing rate tax district. So we'll show you a little bit more about what that means, but we need 51% of the tax rate, not the taxing districts, to approve the MUFTI program in order for it to go into effect. So if it does go into effect, it'll be starting on February 1st of 2022. And this is kind of how a application would come to us. So just because you meet all those requirements doesn't mean you automatically get to participate in the MUFTI program. So city staff would have a pre-development meeting with the developer before December 31st of the year the tax exemption begins. So next year is a little complicated, but starting after that, if they wanted to start building in 2023 and have a tax exemption on their program, they would need to meet with city staff before December 31st of 2022 in order for them to qualify for the MUFTI.
So you couldn't build in 2022 now and get the exemption?
Yes, but we have a little bit of a specific process for that. This is just a normal year that we're talking about.
You just have to get it done and get qualified before July 1, which is
actually April 1. We'll have that conversation on the next slide. So in a normal year, they have to talk to the city talk to city staff, get their application deemed complete, and then we have a public hearing held by Florence City Council to review the application. At that point, our City Council will look at the application and say, is this worth the loss of tax revenue for the benefit of having this project? And they'll go through that conversation. And before that conversation happens, we will alert all of our taxing districts of that application going in front of our City Council in order for you guys to participate in the program in the conversation as well. So, if they do decide yes, this is, and give them the MUFTI, they will not begin, or the exemption must not begin until exemption will not begin until the construction of the property is completed. So if they build for a year, that doesn't count as one of the 10 years. It starts once the occupancy certification is given to them. However, the exemption must be granted before construction begins. So if a developer decides halfway through constructing their property, shoot, I want a MUFTI, it's too late. They need to apply and be approved by City Council before the first shovel goes in the ground. We'll talk, go ahead.
That leads me back to one of your earlier slides, that existing ground level commercial.
Yeah, so if it's just a commercial building and they wanted to razor that and put housing there, not on top, because that would be a remodel. So this is all new construction.
It had to be all new construction.
So if they wanted to not add it, but take that commercial property down and make it into residential, then that would fall. Like if Bill wanted to completely destroy his brand new beautiful building over there and build an apartment building, he would maybe qualify. But he's not going to do that because he spent a long time on that project.
Maybe something on Maple Street, but not there.
Yeah. All right. So one thing we wanted to talk through specifically, because you are a taxing district and we are asking for your support, this does impact all the taxing districts. So when we talk about property tax exemption program, yes, the city is the agency that has the legal authority to enact this program and put it into place and manage and monitor it over the years. But for the exemption, it is all taxes are exempt. All property taxes are exempt on the new construction. That includes not the port,
not the library, not Santa Valley Fire and Rescue, not Los Angeles Ambulance. You do continue to keep the taxes on the land. So this exemption is only on the new construction and the improvements made to it. You continue to collect taxes, everybody does, on the undeveloped land costs, but it does delay getting the property taxes on the improvement values for the up to 10 years or as long as the applicant is qualified to keep receiving that.
Could this go longer than 10 years?
No, that is something set in statute. And right now, actually, that statute was set to sunset in 2032. So right now, the proposal is to put in place this program. We'll see how many people actually apply for it in the next coming years if it does go into effect. And then at any point in time, the city could choose to put a pause on the program. And of course, by state statute, it would just go away in 2032 unless the legislature extended that. Currently, the last sunset date was in 2022. It's been extended. So it could be extended. Obviously, it's been around for a couple of decades.
So if I apply to bill, let's say in 2023, I'm going to get 9 years of exemption.
No, the program's still in place, just the ability to access it and make a new application goes away after 2032.
So you could still get approved in 10 years. You could get approved in 2031 and go to 2041.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha. That's my question.
So, all right, I'm going to move on to the next slide. So we just talked about a couple of the different taxing districts. They're all up here. We will make sure you have the slide deck and make sure everyone has the memo because you can't see it on the screen. We've been used to presenting virtually, so it's in front of your face. But let's see here. Down here in the little corner, the Port of Sayulita is 1.03%. As I'm sure you're very aware, you don't have the largest tax rate. But you are a part of the puzzle. You are a part of the puzzle. Do you know what your tax rate is? Is it like 20 cents?
I don't know. Mike,
what's your...
I have no idea. No, I don't know.
Oh, you don't know. Okay, well, all right. We'll figure that out and give you some examples. But that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
It might be 19 cents. So in total for the city of Florence, city limits, the tax rate of all these districts and agencies and schools and the special levies and bonds, all of that together adds up to $13.63. Per thousand of assessed value. So for every $1 million of investment that a builder would make or a developer would make on new construction, and if they qualify for the program and they receive this exemption, they would not pay $13,600 approximately every year for 10 years. So that would be their savings. So they would save $13,600 in total. This isn't money that goes just to Port of Sayulita, but it's divvied out as it's shown on this puzzle piece.
The whole tax bill.
The whole tax bill.
Well,
on $1 million of assessed value. So
well, 10% of $1 million is $100,000.
Yeah, but it's not 13%. It's $13 per thousand.
$13 per thousand.
So you take $1 million, divided by 1,000. And you take that times $13.
Too many zeros from the
figure. I know, I'm sorry. I did double check my math a few times.
It's the third time we've done this math today.
Well, now you're making me doubt myself. I don't have my cell phone. So anyways, it's substantial. Let's put it that way. It means something to these folks as they're making this investment to be seeking this money. And one thing we haven't talked about with this group here is, I'll share it here. Every apartment complex or larger, multi-unit property that has come to the city of Florence over the last, 6 years that I've been city manager, they all ask the first thing. They ask, what incentives are there? And this is a very common incentive that they're looking for. And you can tell what the market will do, right? That in just the free market out there right now, Florence has not had an apartment complex built since 2007. So the 40-unit apartment complex there behind the Oregon State Police and behind the Nova Medical Center off of Highway 101. That's it. I mean, that's what's been built. And so we're just trying, as a city, there's only so much we can do to participate and help lower the cost of housing. Specifically, really this aimed effort at multi-unit, a little bit denser, more units as quickly as possible built for Florence. It's important. It's important for all of us, all of our employees, everyone at all levels is struggling with housing, the cost of housing. But most importantly, I think a lot of these problems can get solved with the supply. So what are the next steps? Well, we're here talking to you. We'd like you to consider doing a resolution along with all the other taxing districts to provide support, whether it's here tonight or in December. But we do need that support before we go before the Lane County Board of Commissioners in January. In the meantime, on a parallel track, the City Council is also doing their work. They are going to be considering and listening to the first reading of an ordinance. So this is creating a new section of code, a new program that the City of Florence hasn't had before to have this program put into place. So the program's one thing. If the program is set in place and is successful by the city in our overlapping taxing district, and we'll go before the Lane County Board of Commissioners. They're also a taxing district. They need to provide that support, and then they also need to overall approve it so that it's something that can be managed and allowed through the assessor's office. We all know our property taxes actually get paid to Lane County, and the Lane County buildings it up. So they're an important piece of this puzzle. If the program goes into effect on February 1st, for this initiating year, and this is what Sarah was talking about, so for this initiating year, there's a real crunch time for somebody to actually be able to start building in 2022. So if they want this program, and we do know of two applications that are kind of out in the wings waiting to apply, they will have to do a lot of work and be ready February 1st or those first couple weeks of February to get their applications in. We'll work with them on the process. The City Council would actually review and have public hearings on that MUPTI application. We got a public meeting in March, and we have to put that package together and get it off to Lane County before April 1st.
So that would need Lane County's approval.
No, it's just the tax assessor needs to know where the taxes aren't going.
They just have to have it on file.
Yeah.
Well, your verbiage said, when I read your ordinance, that pay $900 fee and send it off to the county. And if it's refused at the county level, you keep your cost out of that $900.
So the county is going to make sure that we have ticked all the boxes. So that's our job as part of our processing to make sure. So Lane County, yes, could, in theory, say, Lane County says it offers could be like, whoa, I've seen they've already built half of this. They totally don't qualify. Or whatever they might figure out. But it's not the commissioners don't have to approve anything.
No.
It's Lane County Assessor's Office. So you're right. There could be the off chance they could
could throw a flag or something.
They could throw some flag and then that's just acknowledging.
But the way that verbiage was in there, it made me think that just because you get through the city that you're
It's not the the Lane County Tax Assessor's Office is approving it, not the commissioners. Different things.
There could be a technicality. Part of our job, you're paying a little bit of an admin, or there's a little bit of an admin fee in that $970 that is us helping make sure that people are as qualified as possible. So April 1st is the deadline, I guess, is the case for every year. And then it resets. So you know, as soon as April 1st, 2022 comes and goes, this year, the new clock would start in April 2nd of 2022, and you're starting to look at and talk about projects that would want to break ground in 2023. So except for the initiating year, there can be this quite a long runway, you know, lots of time to have meetings and talk and work through things. It's just this initial year, there's quite a sense of urgency. So, we're here tonight. We talked to the library board. We had the Bureau board. Of course, Iusla tonight. Tomorrow night, we're going to do Western Lane Ambulance and Cytosol Valley Fire and Rescue. And then in December, we're going to go to the Cytosol School District and probably Lane Community College as well. And then the Lane County Board of Commissioners in January. So now it's the official time for questions. I'll turn it back over to Chairperson Duman to facilitate that.
Any questions? Mike, Craig?
Yeah, explain the 51% to me.
Okay, so can we go back? Thank you to the little puzzle pieces. So 51% of the tax rate. So do you remember I said the total tax rate for the city of Florence proper? So anybody who actually pays the city of Florence property tax plus everyone else that's on the bill, that adds up to $13.63. We need 51% of that rate to get a nod of approval. So the city of Florence is almost 20%. Cytosol Valley Fire and Rescue is basically 11%. So that's 31%. And then Lane County, now that I've rounded up, I'll round down, and 8%. So now we're seeking, now we need some version of everyone else to get us to 51%. The Cytosol School District says yes. Obviously, they're a big chunk up there of the 27%. So that's the 51%.
So really, you only need about three, the two big districts and one other one to make the difference, right?
That would be true. However, one thing in talking to Lane County staff, as they've evaluated and approved, as they've watched Lane County commissioners evaluate and approve other MUFTIs, they know that Lane County Board of Commissioners really likes to see a united front from the community, that this really means something to us and that we all see value in this property tax exemption program to help incentivize this type of housing in our communities.
So they're looking for unanimous.
They would like that, but yeah. They do understand.
What does the statute say? Does it just say 51%? The heck
yeah.
Does
it say?
It really doesn't matter if you get the three big districts, the rest of them really don't have a say in it.
But it does matter what Lane County says. We could check all the boxes, get just the bare minimum of 51%. And if that does not satisfy them, they will not approve the program. And we do need their approval.
They need to see strong support is what.
So it does matter. And that's why we're here tonight at 7:50 on a Wednesday night.
I'm curious why they decided 10 years as opposed to 5 years. Is there a reason for that?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Is there a reason for the 10 years versus a 5-year period?
Yeah, so the 10-year period is a part of the statute. So this is for the multi-unit property tax exemption, the ORS that's referenced in these materials. It's the 10 years. When you're talking about 5 years, that's something we hear in other tax exemption programs. It just doesn't apply in this case. This one's 10 years.
The state rules are 10 years.
I can't explain the reasoning.
No, that's fine. It just seems like a long time to get a return on your investment.
I do want to hop back to your question about affordable housing or, making sure that these properties are affordable. One of the things that Aaron has continuously said today, which I think is really important, is that this is an issue of supply and demand in our community, right? Like landlords can demand an exorbitant amount for rent because there's not enough supply today. And if we have more supply, hopefully the demand will go down and rents will also go down. We can't settle. We can't guarantee that, of course. However, what we saw in Newport, because Newport's MUFTI is just affordable housing, they have to be a nonprofit corporation in order to build or to be able to be part of the MUFTI program. And what our ad hoc committee really did decide with that is like, that's just not enough housing for us for what we need. So affordable, capital A, affordable housing developments usually have a requirement on the rent that's based on what we call AMI or area median income. And it's usually a percentage of that area median income. So for It usually starts at 60% of area median income, which is about $35,000 a year for Lane County, which, yes, that does qualify quite a bit of our service industry. However, the people, not only service industry workers can't find housing, right? We have public utility workers here. I bet you have a bunch of people at the port that can't find housing that you hear from your employees. You know, my house isn't fitting my family, or I can't take this job because I don't have a solid housing structure here. We have teachers that can't find housing, that the school district hires teachers and then they can't take the job because they can't find a house in town. You know, there's so many people that make over what they would have to require the housing to be set at, that we felt that it's important to open it up to all housing developments, just because we didn't want to limit what the income requirements are on those. So that
it doesn't address affordable housing. It just addresses housing.
Yes, and exactly. And so, but this doesn't disclude affordable housing developers from applying for the MUPTI, right? If a nonprofit wanted to come in and build 80 units of affordable housing and they could qualify for the MUPTI program, then yes, they can, you know, sure, they would be considered
same
for
as
it.
Nepal could expand.
Exactly. But the same thing goes for a regular developer who wanted to charge market rate housing for this property. If they could qualify and the city council said yes, then yes, they would qualify. So it just allows more because we need more supply, right? Like what we've done has not worked. And so we're looking for something a little bit
better. Trying to affect the market by increasing the supply.
Yes.
And this is not a rent control issue. You're trying to modify the market by increasing the supply, which
yeah,
I strongly support, as opposed to a rent control or some other issue that ends up long-term negatively affecting your availability.
I will say too, we talked to the people at Dev Northwest who are the developers for the 12 cottage clusters over on Airport Road, kind of by the Boys and Girls Club Teen Center. And those were 12 cottage clusters, home buyers. So they wouldn't have qualified for the monthly program, but they got over 170 applications for those 12 homes and over 50 of them qualified. So there is a need for affordable, not capital A affordable, but workforce housing,
no doubt about it.
Because those were $275,000. That's still not that affordable. But that really does show you what the demand is currently for that type of housing.
Is that what those houses went for,
$275,000? It depends on.
Those one bedroom started at 185 and then it went up to about 280.
For three
on
bed,
size.
Two bath.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But it's still about 100.
They just got the Yeah,
and it's still $150,000 less than our average three bed, two bath house.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, which is, I keep on saying this like I'm proud, but I'm not. It's eight months in a row that we are a higher sale price for a three bed, two bath home over Eugene. So we're that average price is higher than Eugene for the last 8 months in a row. Like we are.
It's supposed to go up.
It's all those people in Eugene moving out.
Well, I think there's lots of issues.
Yeah, I'm sure there.
You know, we can't solve all the problems, but one thing we do know is this is a program that the city qualifies for, is allowed to offer, and
might help and couldn't hurt.
Yeah, and the other thing is it's built into the program in the code. Is every 2 years the city council will evaluate this program. And if we've gone gangbusters and we've gotten those 600 units, great. Maybe the council will want to put a pause on it. If there's some things that aren't working, they're modifying, or if there's an additional program to institute for some expanded efforts, they might consider that too. So we could be back in 2 years asking for something different.
Well, Terry, can we consider this resolution tonight?
Sure. I'm prepared to introduce a motion, but we've got an example resolution here on the packet.
Right, it's right here. And this is the resolution.
Okay, good.
I wasn't aware what you had before you, and I didn't want to make any assumptions. So,
well, Rob, would you like to go ahead and move then? If you got,
well, at least to get it as a point of discussion so we can take action on it, I would like to move for the adoption of resolution number 111721, a resolution supporting the City of Florence multi-unit property tax exempt program.
I will second that motion.
I would like to ask you for your question first. There is a motion made. Is there a second?
He did say second.
Okay. Second's made.
Yes. Got it.
Discussion. Any discussion? We'd like to discuss this.
Oh, there you go.
Mike? Craig?
I don't know. It just, I'm in favor of, I don't like it because it doesn't consider affordable housing. I understand what you're saying about supply and demand. That's pretty basic. But somebody has to take care of those people that are moving in. And I know that there's lots of working class people that are looking for houses and any apartments or anything, but we have a whole heck of a lot of people who have to support all that. And so I don't like the program geared towards anybody. I'd like it to be a little bit more geared towards affordable type housing, but I'm not going to stand in the way for the poor. So
that's great. Craig?
Nope, I'm good with it.
I agree with you, Mike. I at first thought this was for affordable, but for 1%, you know, and anything for housing. I know my employees feel the crunch. So
yeah.
We're calling for the vote.
Okay.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, it passes unanimously.
Thank you guys for the presentation.
Maybe our 1% will get you over the threshold.
I'm rooting for unanimous from all of the other agencies.
If it makes you feel any better, you'll see the teeny tiny, I'm not showing you, this teeny tiny bar is the Wayne County 4-H program. So you're not the smallest one.
Okay.
Their name doesn't even fit on the. Oh, yes. Thank you. Can I?
I also am going to just say thank you to both of you, Craig and Mike. Thanks for having us tonight.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, guys. I know you have other, literally, quite literally, other fish to fry. So.
Yeah, but the numbers are down. Fishing numbers are down.
Well, it's not because of the sea otters.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got lots of crab.
Now that will be the battle, is the forage.
You might as well ask us for more sea lions. Sorry.
Thank you.
I just can't support that.
No.
That's 1.3%.
You all have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you guys for showing up in person, giving us a good presentation. The third time through, I think I understand it.
All right.
Have a good night.
We'll have
you
on deck next presentation.
Yeah.
All right.
Moving on in our meeting. Go ahead,
Rob. No, go ahead. You go ahead.
Now we'll get to the business approval of the minutes by consent. Any questions about the minutes?
Nope.
Hearing none, they're approved by consent. Approval of the financials by consent. Kelly, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Checks printed in September was $106,589.48. Occupancy from campground was up 9% at 84 total percent, and the mortgage stayed the same at 60%.
Any questions for Kelly? Hearing none, they're approved by consent. I'd like to start a discussion on commercial storage. In my walking of the property, I'll try to keep this short and brief. Our commercial storage area is a complete and utter disgust.
I agree.
We have people that are storing stuff on our property for virtually little or no money. That's garbage, has no monetary value. We need to eliminate it. And the people that are in good standing and would like to reconsider it, there's no reason we can't authorize the port manager to gravel a pathway up to the spoil site and put their stuff up there.
Except that we're going to develop the spoil site into camping. So we don't want to do that.
Well, we need to do something. If there is anybody that would like to, I know there is
one. Well, let's make an incorporated part of the overall plan and see how much. But are we required to have commercial storage?
No, yeah, we're not.
We're not required.
But it sure is unsightly. So
it's a garbage bin out.
So let's make it part of the overall. We know that we're going to develop. At least I hope we're going to develop a plan and approach to how we're going to handle the spoil site. And let's see if there's an area that is available. If not, we need to make the best economic decision for the port. Everything needs to be the highest and best use.
I agree with you, but I'm here to say that we've been talking about doing this highest and best use. I'm saying I want to get rid of this commercial storage now.
Well, when you say get rid of it, can we just make it go away by not allowing it anymore?
Yes, we can. And the only reason I said maybe move it up on top, we do have a couple of renters that do pay rent and do utilize the space. The only one that comes to my mind is a local fisherman, Pizarro, Al Pizarro.
What if we gave him a space and fenced it so he could keep his stuff somewhat out of sight?
Or give him the option to fence it and keep it out of sight.
Yes.
But I still think we need to make it, whatever we do, it needs to be incorporated into this overall approach for that whole site.
It is. And I agree with you, Bill, but if we sat here and keep doing that, we're never going to get rid of this. I would like to authorize Dave. We have people out there, and I'll just name Oregon Coast Marine. They don't have mortgage in our facility. They're not entitled to use our commercial storage, and still they have stuff stored there. That's just free rent. They're cheap rent for them.
Why don't we just ask them to leave?
Well, that's what my discussion was here for. We need to ask them to leave. We need to ask, we have another tenant who I'm not going to name that is so far in arrears that we're going to end up cleaning this mess up. But we need to have
that needs to be addressed. If somebody's in arrears, get them out of there.
Well, that's the process.
What's our policy towards commercial storage? Do we have one?
We did have our policy was basically commercial operations, whether it be Oregon Marine Construction, a charter boat, a commercial boat, anyone that had some kind of commercial operation, we allowed them at a very discounted rate to store what they use to conduct business, or have mortgage.
Is everybody that's out there using our, do the people that are out there now all meet the criteria for?
Not at this point, no.
Well, then why are they still there?
We're in the process of trying to get one of them out of there. I mean, we don't want the stuff that's back there.
Problem is they don't either.
But there's a process to go through of taking possession of it. So we can get rid of it.
You know, it's no different than what we were talking about for the other issue with the island. And we can, we just give them note. You have 30 days notice to clear your stuff out, or we're going to clear it out for you. And our attorney can put something together.
We have given notice to.
Okay.
At this point, I just don't want.
And Bill,
I understand.
That was my reason for bringing this up. I mean, we sat here and we talked about doing it. I want to get rid of it. I want to.
Well, I've never talked about doing it before. This is brand new to me.
Yeah, me too.
It's brand new.
I'm pretty new.
We haven't discussed it before.
Bill. I'll stand corrected. You're right. We haven't discussed commercial mortgage, but we talked about doing the campground area.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
My point is, I don't want to make doing this action on the storage a condition of doing the campground, because that could be a year.
No, I never said that.
Well, okay. I just want to make sure we understand.
Terry, the port is driven by its own policies. And if we need to revisit the policy for commercial storage, that's the first thing we should do. And then implement the policy, and that'll take care of whatever the issue is out there. And those are the steps.
And that was my point here, is I was bringing light to the situation, because I would like to direct the manager to start the next day and implement the policy.
And I totally agree with you. It needs to be addressed. It's an eyesore. I was walking by it today. And if we're going to continue to upgrade our campground facility here, it needs to be addressed. And I agree with
that. We just need to follow the policy.
And that's what I'm saying.
And if we need to amend the policy to accomplish whatever we feel we need to do, then let's amend it.
Absolutely.
But we need to have the policy in place, because as long as we're following our policy, whatever it is, we're fine.
But Chairman Terry, if you're looking for a consensus, I agree with your point.
Yeah, I do too.
Mike?
Oh yeah, I don't have any problem with it at all, Terry.
Greg?
No, I don't have any problem with that. As long as we just got to make sure we don't get in any trouble with it, you know?
We have a policy in place, and that's what my point was. And I didn't want to put this policies in place before we start evicting to wait till our campground's in place, because that's just an unsightly mess out there. We have a policy that will deal with it, and we can deal with it. I was going to instruct the manager to deal with that.
I think we have unanimous consensus.
Yeah, that's all I need is a consensus. It's not a motion item. It's nothing. Everything is in place.
Yeah, you just need to follow.
We already have policy in place that addresses this?
Well, yes.
I know in the past that we've talked about that commercial storage area. And this is the second or third time that area has been moved. We don't have as much of what we used to. We moved it into that front area right there. Now it's starting to be unsightly. It's probably not the right location for it, but I know we've had discussions about it before where everybody stopped that we still have to offer commercial
storage.
Was this
storage. A discussion?
It might have been.
It was never while I was on this commission.
It might have been before you.
Foresight.
Okay.
Foresight.
Okay.
Well, again,
yeah.
You know, whatever the policy is, we follow it for now. Mm-hmm. If we need to modify the policy, then
that
we need
may
to
come.
Modify.
And that may come.
But at the time when that commercial storage was, we used to have crabbers here. There was crab pot storage. There was a lot of activity commercially, going on.
But that market
at least
has changed
a little more than what, I mean, now it's non-existent.
And that land, as we have proven, that land is very valuable. I mean,
now we can
premium campsites.
Yeah. Well, if nothing else, though, I mean, can you imagine parking your motorhome there, your $500,000 motorhome, and looking out at the pile of pallets? You know, there's just no reason for it. And they have no legitimate reason for being there.
Totally agree, Terry.
Okay. Moving on. Manager and commissioner reports. Anybody?
Well, that's a resolution.
Oh, 6A. I'm sorry. We do have a resolution in front of us.
Oh, okay.
Resolution 11-17-21A, a resolution designating the Port of Site Use Laws Highlands closed until further notice. Do I need to read the resolution?
No.
No.
I've read it.
I move for the adoption of the resolution that you just read.
Is there a second?
I'll second it. Mike,
it doesn't matter. Anybody.
No, it's been seconded.
It has been moved and seconded. Any discussion?
Hold it. Kelly needs for the record.
I need to know who seconded it.
Commissioner Buckwell.
Yeah, that's what I heard also.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Nope. Hearing none, let's take a vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Hearing none, it passes unanimously.
Good job.
Manager and commissioner reports.
I know this has been a long meeting, but at the last meeting, Mike had asked about our Wi-Fi. And so
good question.
I've got some information. Robbie from PIAC has gotten back to us, and we've seen a lot of activity.
Did they bring some?
So now there is Wi-Fi here. Well, it's coming there.
You mean fiber optics?
Fiber optics. And so he has told us that he's already made it available to us. The transition will not be that costly. And hopefully within the next 60 days, rather than when somebody starts talking about bandwidth or this, or that, I mean, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but there's always been some kind of issue that some of us may not understand when we're hearing about this Wi-Fi, how many people are on it at this time, even though we have more bandwidth. It still boggles my mind to try and figure it out. But hopefully within 60 days, we'll have fiber optics available to us here at the RV park.
Would it be available out on the dock also?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, at some point, we're going to talk to him about ICN and making the cameras also. So,
but what about docks for livable?
Well, you know, I didn't ask that, but well, I'm assuming that with ICN being capable and our cameras along the boardwalk,
yeah,
it should allow for the dock
to be able to pick up also.
Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. So that's the information that I do have.
Awesome.
Well, that's good.
Really good.
One other thing. This last week I was approached by the Coast Guard, and I don't know how much of this is public knowledge or not, but the Coast Guard has got a project that is set to start in, I believe it's the spring of 2023. They're actually going to be removing their mortgage facility out there and building a new one, and it's going to be about a 2-year project. So I met with the Coast Guard, when was it, 2 days ago? Or yes, it was yesterday. And it was quite an extensive meeting to where they had a lot of people from Seattle engineers and Coast Guard from Coos Bay and here. And what they're going to need is moorage for
the 47s
and the 29 footer. And they'll also probably need some kind of housing for their staff here that has to man the boat. So they're talking about a couple RV sites and 3 dock spaces, the capability of them being able to fuel their own boats at any hour. And it's
can we a project. Do all that? Can we do all of it?
Yes. Yeah.
Sounds good.
And we talked at length with them. I haven't brought it to you guys yet because, I mean, we're going to have to negotiate some kind of contract with them, but it could be quite lucrative for 2 years.
Yeah.
So
that'd be awesome. Plus, it would bring a lot of that activity. It's just going to bring more people into the RV park.
Oh, yeah.
To watch the action.
Sure. Dave, quick question on that. We're not talking about having to add any more dock space or anything else.
No,
we could do it within our current facilities.
What I talked to them about, we went and we walked the facility. They told me where they would like to be, what would be the best, best spot for them. And I pretty much told them that we could make it available. It was definitely doable. They may need to bring in some kind of Connex trailer for storage of their gear and supplies and stuff like that. But there's no doubt with the electrical, the services that we got, that it would work perfect for them. So,
and even though we have a current rule about 6 months on the site, we can by resolution, we could modify that. If they need to be there for 2 years at an RV site, legally, we could do that.
We could definitely make an exception.
Yeah. We can make them move off for a day like we do everybody else and move back.
And then, is that the way it works?
And it's something that wouldn't happen until like the spring of 2023. I'm sure some kind of
sounds exciting. I like it.
Happened before that.
Finally getting one something in there.
Yes.
I actually topoed, had a contract with them to topo the moorage area where they moor those boats. I was out there in a little kayak and a depth finder and a GPS unit.
It would require, though, at least one commissioner get a ride on a 47-footer.
Well, I don't know if this is something that's been brought to the city yet or not, but I specifically asked.
I haven't heard that. If you talk about the city, I haven't heard nothing.
Well, I don't know how the city would be involved in it.
Not you. So no. I think that's a federal facility.
Yeah. No.
Coast Guard?
Yeah. They just have to deal with all the Corps of Engineers and the Department of State Lands. Good luck.
So it's already their project. Yeah. As far as I know.
Well, I'm saying, at least from one commissioner here, that I encourage you to work with them. Sounds like absolutely.
Our next meeting will be December 15th. Mike, Craig, anything in closing?
No, not a thing.
Oh, I'm good.
Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Thank you. You see, guys.
All of you.
You're going to have to do it in person.